Thank you for tuning back in, ladies and gentlemen. This is Culture Shock Entertainment Radio, Shock Therapy. You're in the building with the architect and my man, I'm Just Saying.
What's going on, people?
We have a special guest with us here today. If you guys are not hip to him, if you're not into it, if you're not down with the poetry thing, you're just missing out. We got Prentice Powell in the building, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing, Prentice?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing swell, swell. It's good to have you, man. It's good to have you. I was excited. I was excited when we heard that we were gonna get you, man, because your work is just dope, man. It's just it's next level. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I appreciate it, man. You know, honestly, it's just, you know, it's just me trying in my notebook, and people happen to enjoy a little bit of my craziness and my thoughts. So, you know, I'm okay with that.
That's good. That's good. So what got you on this road to poetry? Like, was this something that you were always into, or how did you start with the poetry thing?
To tell you the truth, man, not at all. For me, it was really a matter of, I have a cousin. He goes by Tyson Amir. He's actually a really dope MC. But when we were younger, everything he tried to do, I tried to do. So when he played football, I started playing football. Basketball, I started playing basketball. When I got a little older, he came to the local library and did a poem. So naturally, I went home and wrote a poem. I was having a rough breakup with a girlfriend at the point in time, and my mother came and got me out of my apartment, and she took me to the Oakland Slam in 2003. And she signed me up, and I didn't know it. And for those who don't know, Slam is, poetry slams are competitive poetry. So you compete against other people. Long story short, she signed me up. I did the poem. I did rather well. I did forensic speech and debate in high school. So I've had this ability to memorize things pretty easily. And, the coach came up, her name was Sonia Whittle, and she asked me to come back next week to compete for the team. And I explained to her that, you know, I had never written a poem before, and I just happened to have this poem. So long story short, I wrote a poem each week to compete. I made the Oakland Slam team in 2003, and 2 months later, we came in fourth in the nation. So, you know, 2 months after writing my first poem, coming in fourth in the nation on the team, you know, I kind of said, well, let me see what this can do. And even still, honestly, man, it's always just been really therapeutic to me. This whole spoken word movement is for me to keep my sanity, for me to get my thoughts off, and for me to deal with a lot of insecurities that I have, man. It lets me know that I'm not alone in my thought process. It's actually really comforting. So it's my therapy, man. And, you know, I can't take credit for this, everything that's happening now. It's really God, man. I'm just a vessel, man. So it's kind of how I got started.
That's cool, man. That's what's up. Hey, man, I'm Just Saying. Hey, got a question for you. I seen that you teach. You tell me a little bit about what you do during the, you know, because I see you and you work with a lot of young African-Americans. So I was interested in seeing where exactly do you teach? Is it college? Is it middle school or high school? I wasn't sure.
Okay, so what I do, I have a couple of facets of what I do as far as education is concerned. One thing I do is I develop and create creative writing curriculum for school districts and nonprofits. So wow. I'll either come into a school district or a nonprofit, teach them how to use my lesson planning, mm-hmm. or have a residency. So I taught in East Oakland for 2 years at Calsama High School.
Okay.
I was spent 6.5 years in the Hunters Point in the Bayview Alice Griffin Housing Project right wow. next to Candlestick in San Francisco.
Okay.
Developing a youth leadership development program. And so that's one aspect of what I do. What I'm doing right now, my day job is I work with autistic children with severe behavioral disorders. So, for instance, today is has been a rough day, man. You know, I like to keep it really transparent.
I
like to keep it transparent because I think the more success I have as an artist, I think the more skewed vision, ironically, I get. You know, so people start to perceive me a certain way when ironically I'm telling you how I feel about things, you know?
Right, right.
So today I've been urinated on, I've been punched, I've been scratched. I got a couple bruises on me right now, as a matter of fact, dealing with some of these kids who are emotionally disturbed. But that's what I do every day, man. So
wow.
I grind during the day, I work in education, on my free time, I do speak. I do a lot of speaking engagements. I focus on working with African-American boys specifically.
It's needed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I feel like if we have an opportunity to be on the television screen and doing something positive, how can we not come back to our kids.
Absolutely.
You're right.
We idolized brothers that look like us on television, and most of them were dribbling the ball or throwing a football, you know, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I figure if I have a chance to be on national television, I'm starting to do these things. I have to go back to them in the classroom because they're going to listen.
You're right. And it's, you know what's so cool about that? Because I'm a big advocate of autistic children because I have a son and he has autistic tendencies. And it really got me open to understand and wanting to work with a lot of parents that have issues with their children and don't know what exactly to do. They don't have the proper knowledge of how to handle their children, how to love on them, how to, you know. And so when I seen that, I said, wow. I showed my wife this and he worked with autistic children. She was like, wow. I said, that is so awesome. So I'm like, man, see, I said, I knew, you know, I got to say this. After I talked to you, I was so pumped Sunday. I was praising God in my kitchen because I was so excited because I little did I know that you would reach back and, you know, and it was an honor for me.
Believe me, I know I got the voicemail to prove it.
Right. He got that voicemail because I was too excited on the voicemail. But I, you know, I put a post up on my Facebook and I said, to God be the glory. Yes, yes, yes. And so it's funny when I seen your post today about this news, I said, see, I said, now that man did that for me. And look how God turned around and did something for him. Now, leading into that, because you knew I was going there, I got to know, is it possible we can find out what this big news is all about?
You know, brother, I was so juiced to get this email. I contractually can't announce it or it won't happen.
We understand that.
I can't. I will say that it is a 2015 engagement.
And it is happening, correct?
It looks very promising.
Okay.
What you witnessed on Facebook, even if it does not happen, God is good. But what you realize on Facebook, man, all the time, is just my genuine excitement. I'm really trying to learn how to be. I feel I'm a complete professional, but what I don't think people necessarily understand is that I'm loving this ride and I love good news from anybody.
Right.
You know, so I get just as juiced about good news coming from you guys as I do good news I have for myself. And honestly, I would celebrate your good news before I would celebrate my own because I'm humbled by the good things that happened to me.
Oh, yeah.
If that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, well, we understand that sentiment.
So with the Facebook post, it was just, I had to had to let it out real quick.
I did the same thing Sunday, bro. Same thing. They had no idea what I was excited about, but I told them, I said, wait till y'all hear this. You guys don't even understand.
Hell yeah. We were able to feel it in your all caps that you put up there. So yeah, we definitely felt your excitement. It resonated all the way over here to Culture Check Entertainment.
Yeah. It was definitely a good moment for me this morning. Like I said, whether it comes through or not, just the notion that I would be considered for what I can't talk about.
Absolutely.
It's just a blessing, man. I think it just speaks to keep faith, man. You work hard, good things can happen.
That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me ask you something really quick, Prentice. Let's get back to the teaching thing.
Okay.
I want to know a little more about the teaching. The reason why I'm asking is because with Culture Shock Entertainment, the parent company to Culture Shock Entertainment Radio, we do a lot of outreach, a lot of advocacy. We do a lot of things in the community. And what was interesting to me, being the founder of it or whatnot, was when I initially planned on doing this, not to say I didn't have any intentions to help other people, because that was always in my heart, but I never knew it would be this big and that would be at the forefront of everything that I do, trying to impact other people's lives, just like you said, more than even trying to impact our lives. So how did you get into the teaching aspect of it, particularly dealing with disabled children, and what inspired you to want to give back to your community that you came out of?
So for me, I got into education through poetry.
Okay.
So it was not an aspiration of mine whatsoever. You're talking to a man who is sophomore year of college. I decided that, you know, JetBlue had a promotion, a round trip ticket to Europe for $180, and I bought it and I left school.
Wow.
You know, I put a backpack on and I made the decision. I had crossed. All right, just got done pledging, mm-hmm. and I was like, yo, I'm out. And they were like, what do you mean you're out? And I said, I'm going to Europe, man. They're like, what you going to do in Europe? I was like, I don't know, but I got a backpack, some clothes, I'm going to do this poetry.
Wow.
And so you're talking to somebody who made a conscious decision to leave higher education.
Right.
And I am going back to get my degree. So the reason why I bring that up is because, again, that is something that I'm often, sometimes still to this day, self-conscious about not finishing.
Okay.
And I feel like expressing it kind of motivates me more and encourages me more to finish. Mm-hmm. But the ironic thing is that I got into teaching education through poetry. I had a friend of mine, her name is Christina. She was a former principal at Castlemont in East Oakland. She's now doing wonderful things in New York. And I started going to her class and speaking and just performing. Wow. And through that, I got in contact with another organization called Youth Speaks, which promotes literacy all across the country. And I worked with them for a while, learning how to develop curriculum and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of took me into the classroom.
Okay.
And the thing that motivated me most at that point in time, I had read The Spook Who Sat Behind the Door. And that was one of the most influential books I'd ever read, because the idea of me not finishing school but going back into the school system to teach kids that look like me what I think they should know was a hustle and a challenge to me. So I was like, how can I do this?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because you have to be credentialed to get into these classrooms. But how can I find a way to get into the classroom and teach these kids what I think they should know?
Right.
And my poetry was the tool to allow me to do that. And then learning that I can turn my poems into lesson plans and to teach these kids that writing doesn't always mean it sucks. It doesn't always mean you have to use proper grammar and proper spelling. It is an outlet. It led me into education in the classroom. And for there, things kind of ran themselves and kind of took off. And as far as me working with autistic children, I got drained. You know, working in the inner city, your students die.
Mm-hmm.
Your students get locked up, they get hurt, and you know, honestly, it takes a toll on you.
Right.
And I used to always say that getting to work for me was an obstacle course. So I can only imagine what the kids who lived in the hood had to go through just to get to the classroom.
Right.
And so my wife is actually a social worker, man, and she works with adults with cognitive disorders.
Okay.
And some are autistic and things of that nature. So I gained a little bit of interest in it and decided to not leave education as a whole, but just kind of transition my my 9-to-5 focus on autistic children and children with behavioral disorders. So that's how I got here, man.
That's good. It's funny because it seems like, you know, our courses run parallel because I had a similar situation myself. I pledged Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, Blue Phi, you know.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, and I ended up having to leave my sophomore year as well. And it was funny because it was in that time that I was going. That's when God started transitioning me business-wise. I always had a business mind, but it was certain things that he was showing me that pretty much in a nutshell, to make a long story short, because this interview is about you, he pretty much told me that where I'm about to take you, I don't want anybody to mistake that it was your degree or your education that got you there. So that's what really put me on my path. So it's funny how, you know, God put you in certain situations to be even greater than what you thought you could be.
Isn't it amazing, man, how he shows you things through other people?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the thing I'm learning about working with autistic children is that there's so much beauty in the autistic mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
There's so much beauty in the autistic brain, the freedom that they have. You know, you look at, I got kids who, you know, they can't help but stand in a corner and talk to themselves.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wish I had that same lack of self-consciousness.
The awareness of the issues of life, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they don't worry about what people think, what people are going to say about them.
Right.
They don't care.
Yeah.
And for me, I find a lot of that, man. I find a whole lot of beauty in that.
Right.
So, you know, it's just kind of motivating to keep going, keep pushing, man. And, you know,
yeah, that's
I'll do
cool,
the best
man.
I can with what I have. And, you know, if I have any gifts or any abilities and talents that will help somebody else, I think it's my job to do that.
Hey, that's right. I feel the same way, you know, and it's funny because in the mornings with my son, I get up And we have a routine where he gets up and he loves to dance. That's his thing. Right. So what I do, I put on Happy, you know, a Pharrell Williams song, and we put that on and we wash up and we get him straight and, you know, I brush his teeth and everything, because sometimes it can be a challenge with them. But I use the tool of dancing and music to, you know, just his mornings are so good. He's smiling right. so much. He's having fun. He loves to dance. So I let him, you have to let him be free. And so that's like what you're doing is so amazing, man. I really, you know, parents like me appreciate that. Because my wife was a social worker, you know, for inmates and whatnot. And so she dealt with a lot of behaviors and things like that. And so I definitely can understand, you know, your passion and love for that. But, you know, that's amazing, man. Let me ask you a question that I think everybody wanted to know. Oh, and I feel left out. I pledge Me Phi Me fraternity. So
okay, don't see Me Phi Me.
Yeah,
okay.
You know. whoop, you know. Good. Oh yeah, you know how we do it. But I wanted to ask you about when you got the call to do Arsenio, what was your mindset? What did you think? How did that take place, and what was your reaction to that? Because that's a pretty big deal.
Right. Well, when I got the call for the first performance.
Yeah.
My first time. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, man, so when I got the call for Arsenio, one, I can't leave out a pivotal program on TV, a pivotal production company, Walton Isaacson, who is a production company of Versus and Flow on TV One, because had it not been for Versus and Flow and me being blessed to be on, you know, all three seasons, Arsenio would not have happened. You know, so let's, right. you know, I got to make that, you know, absolutely clear. So I can't mention, you know, performing on Versus on Arsenio Hall show without mentioning Versus and Flow.
Shout out to Versus and Flow. A lot of dopeness going on.
Absolutely.
Definitely. My apologies. Versus and Flow is dope. So, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful, man. They're doing an amazing job. So the way that happened, Andrew Logan, who's their director, gave me some creativity. And allow me to do the system on Versus and Flow last season. And, you know, he showed me a lot of love for allowing me to do that. And their whole team, Walton Isaacson, for even putting me on the show, for the third season. And, they saw me through Versus and Flow. So I got the call. And when I got the call, you know, it was something that was like a maybe, like potential talk. You know, that they're interested in doing some kind of spoken word.
Right.
And, you know, in my head, I'm thinking to myself, like, you got to let me do the system on that show. You got to let me do the system. Because for me, I still practice that poem. And that poem is probably the most
sickest, dopest, one that livest. I have.
Yeah.
No, thanks, man. But it takes a lot of work. I'm proud of where it's going, because it's not developed exactly to the point I need it to be. But I'm proud of where it's going. And I was like, yo, if I get a chance to do something on Arsenio Hall show, we're talking Arsenio Hall, you
right,
know?
Right.
Like, we're around this 5 year same age, bragging man, like, you know, like.
Yeah, we grew up on him, right?
I couldn't stay up late enough.
We couldn't either. We snuck. Yeah, we snuck.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so we peeped our head in and we saw, you know, Digital Underground Rock, and we saw Eddie Murphy on the show, and, you know.
Right.
So you telling me that I have an opportunity to perform on our Arsenio Hall show. So for me, honestly, man, my mindset, I came, you know, I've done some TV in Hollywood and LA before, and, you know, it's getting consistent, which is great. I came, brother, I ironed my clothes. I knew they were going to have somebody to press them there. I ironed my clothes. I pressed them in the hotel room. I was fully dressed to hit the stage when they picked me up, you know, when the town car picked me up, man. It was no, I don't want no garment bag. I don't need no garment bag. I don't need no hangers. Yo, I'm wearing exactly what I'm wearing on that stage right now. I just want to kill this show. Just get me on the stage.
Right. I feel you, man.
They asked me if I wanted a sound check. I said, nope. I said, just let me know
when it's too low, I just scream.
Right.
No, for real, man, you know, because I'm hungry.
And
the one thing I pride myself on is my hunger.
Right. It keeps you going. Like, you need it.
You need it, but what I mean, y'all, is like I'm hungry.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to eat out here.
Ethiopian type, right?
Yeah.
Right, I'm talking Ethiopian. We go all third world country. Right. Like, I'm hungry.
I'm doing the best that Prentice Powell can do, and right. I'm trying to kill myself.
Right, right.
You know, I don't worry about anybody else, but I'm trying to kill myself. So my mentality was just, yo, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Yo, make them want you to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. See, this is what I say in my head. Like, I don't know what that means, P, but make them bring you back. You better do something.
Yo.
Make them bring you back. And if they don't, be remembered.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I just got on stage and just, I don't even remember it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, you just zoned out, right?
Dude, that was flawless.
You know how that goes. You get in the zone. So I just kind of blacked out and did my thing, man.
Love it.
Flawless, dude.
Love it. That's how it's supposed to be. That's kind of how we operate, particularly me and my man over here. I'm just saying that's how we go, man. I wake up ready to get it in, man. And that's beautiful in the inner city and the inner community, where it's not a lot of things to look up to or aspire to be, to see somebody with a drive, you know, a drive that's strong enough to say, get on my back and I take all of us where we need to go. Just, you know, roll with me and we can get it done. So, yeah, I like that fire.
Right. What I didn't realize, though, was how much it represented for art form, man, for spoken word. I didn't realize that initially.
I did not realize how,
because, you know, I'm not thinking from the space of me, you know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, it's me going up there, but I'm just saying I have an opportunity. Let me just do my thing.
Right, right.
But I didn't realize how, you know, like, after the system happened on Arsenio, man, like, Burson Flow, there was a lot of love, and that was for poets, you know what I mean? Like, there was so many phenomenal poets that have been on the show, but nobody had ever done spoken word on the Arsenio Hall show.
Right.
And so when I got off, just all the love, man, and poets from across the world are just calling, like, yo, you just did poetry on Arsenio Hall show. I was like, oh, snap. I just did poetry in Arsenio Hall show.
Yeah,
and it just made it that much more humbling, man, you know?
Yeah,
that's good.
Like, it just made it that much more humbling, man. So it's interesting how I'm glad my heart is what I thought it was.
Amen.
Right.
That's true.
You know what I mean? I'm glad it's what I thought it was. I'm glad that I'm having some accomplishments and some things that my mother will be proud of, my family is proud of, and it's not making me egotistical, and I'm not getting full of myself, because honestly, man, this could be the last interview I ever have.
That's true.
You know, this could be that could be the last time I ever rock on TV, man. So,
that's true.
You know, so you just count, you know, just be thankful, man. And that's all I'm really trying to do.
You're preaching to the choir, brother. I definitely agree with that. Now, let me ask you about Good Father. That, you know, we talked about that Sunday. I told you got me with that one. You got me with the system, but Good Father, I had to put the phone down and wipe my eyes. Cause right. That right there, it did some things to me. And so if you can explain to the people the mindset behind that and what it meant to perform that on Arsenio, you know, cause that was another live stage for you to actually go back. And I know you were saying that you had some other poems you wanted to do, but that one in particular was the one that you went with. Could you tell us what was the reason behind you going with that one?
Well, I was given an option last time. They asked me what would I like to do. And I think just off of that, you know, having an option, usually with stuff like that, you don't get to pick. You know, they kind of have an idea of what they've heard from you and what they want you to share.
Right.
I felt it was important. One, I struggled with it. My son started school officially in August, so the whole thing is different now.
Right.
But like I was telling you, everything from how I dressed super casual on purpose.
Right.
I wanted my neck tattoo, which is my son's name that I got May 15th, 2008, when I found out I was having a boy the same day. I just decided to get a neck tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wanted my tattoo that says, let go and let God show across my chest. And I wanted people to see a black man casually dressed. I got 17 tattoos, man. Casually dressed, who loves his child.
Right.
My purpose of that poem has nothing to do with his mother.
Okay.
And that's what I love about that.
I need that to be made really, really clear, because, you know, it's interesting what responses you can get and things of that nature.
Right.
I'm a father. Me being a father means I care about my child.
Right.
So anything I do as a father is about my child or my feelings towards my child.
Right.
That poem is about my aching for my child.
Right.
That poem is only about my feelings for my child. It is not about child support that I do not care less about, that I will gladly pay, that wow. comes out of my paycheck every month, that I don't miss, and he is worth 20 times what I pay.
Right. That's all right. No, that's right there. That's it.
It is not about anything other than the fact that I want to raise my son full time. Call me selfish, call me whatever you want. I want to raise my son. If you put me on a platform where I have 1.6 million people viewing me at a time, you are damn right. I am going to try to do the poem that I think may find a family law attorney who is amazing, who wants to possibly take my case pro bono, or somebody who may have resources to help me get my son. I'm not going to get on stage doing something with similes and metaphors that sounds super dope and you got bars or you that. No, if I can get my son back any stage I got 1.6 billion people viewing me, as a no-brainer.
Right.
Wow.
It was a no-brainer.
Wow.
And my only worry for a month knowing I was going to do that poem was if I can get through it.
Right.
Yeah.
I
seen you kind of was breaking. I said, yeah, he was holding it. I said, I know.
Look, all I said was, P, don't blink. Don't blink. Right. You blink, the tears going to come. It's a wrap.
Yeah, the floodgates
open. It was all in my voice, man. But, you know, a couple of days before I did that, I went and filmed on Monday. It aired the same day I recorded it. I think that Thursday, you know, I was watching my son learn how to ride his bike without training wheels. And, you know, there's a good man around him right now. He has a new little sister, and the brother is solid.
Right.
The brother is solid. You know, mm-hmm. and I say that as a man and as a father, I appreciate the fact that he's a solid brother, because he could be a lame.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
right.
And I'm 3,317.4 miles away, so I can't just get there.
Right. Right.
You know, so he's a good brother, but you know, when I was watching him learn how to ride his bike, my Skype kept freezing,
mm-hmm.
and it was all these picture perfect images of a black man teaching this boy how to ride a bike, and I was just like, ah, you know, and I'm encouraging him and saying, do your thing, like, go, Jess, you're doing a great job, and I told the brother after, like, yo, man, I appreciate you for you know, teaching him how to ride a bike, man, keep him safe, but that killed me, man, it killed me. So when I went up there and did it, I had this fresh new experience that I never thought of. My son is 5, you know, so I never thought past 4. So now I'm thinking about the fact that, you know, I'm not going to be able to teach him how to ride a bike, man. Like, you know, I'm going to be there in first grade, his first day of school. I know that. I'm going to be there for first grade. I don't care. I'm going to be there. I'm going to walk him into class.
Mm-hmm.
But the poem was just know that there are fathers out there who do care. Stop stereotyping us.
Yeah.
You know, and then I want my son back. You know, like, for real.
I understand.
This ain't about TV.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not a performance. And yeah, that's the other thing I want people to know. It's not a performance. That's not, nothing about that was a performance, man.
Yeah, that was your heart. That was your heart. I seen your heart on that one. That's why I said, man, he's spilling his heart. If y'all don't see that, something wrong with y'all, because that man is spilling his heart on TV.
Yeah, we can appreciate that firsthand, because we record a show on Culture Shock Entertainment Radio called Band of Brothers, and one of our panelists, Josh, the fashion maverick, he is kind of in a similar situation. And I watch him, how he has to juggle, you know, his kids outside of his marriage. And when you said the 5 o'clock thing, I'm like, that's spot on, because that's what he always says. I have to get him home by 5 o'clock, and he has to do everything he has to do within that small stretch of time. So, yeah, we can appreciate that from a firsthand experience. And we appreciate you putting it out there, because you're right. There is a stereotype that, you know, that there are not men out there that's willing to step up to the plate and do what they're required to do, not an option, or not that'd be a good thing to do, but required to do, because you chose to lay down and have this child. So we commend you on that.
Definitely.
Well, I appreciate it, brother. You know, again, it's just something that felt necessary.
Good.
You know, it just felt necessary. It felt necessary to do, man. And I'm glad that I've met so many men over the past, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Since that aired, from all across the world, man, and knowing that there are fathers out there who care, I've gotten so much love. But most importantly, man, I share this with everybody. My son called me 2 days after. He called me that Wednesday morning, and he's in Florida. And he called me, and he left a voicemail because I was asleep. It was about 5:30 out here in California.
Okay.
And 8:30 out there, we set it to school. And And I swear I'll never lose his voicemail. He said, "Daddy, I heard your poem. You said my name. Thank you." Mm-hmm. And he said, "And I love you too."
That is awesome.
That's real.
That and is awesome, man.
The thing about that, man, is that, and I cried, man. I cried out of joy, which was so great. But the thing that is awesome is that he's not going to be fed that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's nothing my son's going to be fed to say.
Right, exactly.
So that came from him. And that means that he got out of what I was saying that I love him. And so regardless of what anybody else, how anybody else interprets that poem, my son got out of that his daddy loves him, which is why he said, "I love you too."
Mission accomplished.
And for me, exactly, done. And that's exactly what I put on Facebook. Right. I think I tweeted that out. I was like, "Yo, my son responded, said he loves me too. Mission accomplished."
There you go. There
so
you
after go. That, I was like, "Yo, I'm good. Yo, say what you want, do what you want. I'm good."
Wow.
Good. Well, he gets it.
Let's get you a couple more questions before we get you up out of here. This is what I want to know.
Brother, we got time. I'm good.
Okay. This is what I want to know, because I hear your passion in your voice, and it sounds very similar to someone that we know on this radio station as well. We won't mention his name. But I want to know, who do you look up to? Who inspires you? What drives you? What put that fire inside of you like that? Like, we know it's your kid. We know that pushes you, which pushes all of us. But, like, what else is it that says, "I got to go as hard as I can, and there's no other option"?
My flaws.
Okay.
I need to take that back. That'd be second.
Okay.
First, God.
Right.
But secondly, I say my flaws, man, because I'm a flawed man. And so, as we all are.
Right, right.
Exactly. Exactly.
But now I have a family. You know, I have a family, man. I have two boys, a wife, and a daughter. Mm-hmm. And I want to provide for my family. And I need to stay sane in order to do that. We are already black men in America.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so keeping our sanity is already a challenge, regardless of what walk of life we come from.
That's real.
So for me, with this spoken word, man, it's how I was brought up. I was brought up in this spoken word game by, you know, Sean Williams, who's a part of my Fiveology Collective, our Fiveology Collective, formerly went by Inner City, Scorpio Blues, Amir Suleiman. I have mentors who put me through the grind, man. So anything I'm receiving now, I've worked for. And I mean, you know, I'm catching Greyhound to Texas on a one-way with CDs that I got to sell in order to make my way back. You know, I'm sleeping on people's couches over the years to do this kind of stuff. I'm sacrificing time. I'm ruining potential relationships. You know, I've gotten in arguments. I've almost lost a job. You know, so I'm hungry, man.
You got to be.
And
understand.
For me to be given a gift, one, that is allowing me to generate ears and something to provide my family with, how can I not be motivated?
Right, that's true.
You know, so for me, it's life. Life is short. It can all go tomorrow. This could be the last interview I ever have an opportunity to do. Make it count. So that's my whole thing now. And I know people are watching me. And
I
with people looking at me now, I can't. You know, so I got to work on these flaws, and I have to say something that matters to me most importantly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, really what motivates me, I want to be great. I want to be great.
And, you know, that's real. And we're going to, when we rebroadcast this, there'll be a lot of young brothers listening. And, you know, the sad reality in the community work that I do is you don't hear that anymore. Even back in the day when your aspirations were maybe misguided, there was a aspiration to be great at something.
Right.
Where nowadays you don't even hear, "I want to be great." It's just like, you know, if I could just make it by existing, that's good enough. It's like they need to hear to know we can be great if you push for it.
Right. We can. And all we have to do is exactly what three of us are doing right now is just build.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it. You know? Together. But that's
right. Would you rather having a radio show?
Yeah.
I mean, all we got to do is build. It was a no-brainer when I hit you and called you back, because I told you, like, I don't want to get disconnected.
Right. And I appreciated that. And that's, but you know what? That's the beauty of staying in touch with your people, like you said. And I remember your statement you said, and I never forgot, you said, I'm a normal dude, man.
Yeah.
I'm a normal dude. I'm not. And I think about to your poem, Superheroes. I said, that makes so much more sense. That makes so much more sense. Being comfortable in your own skin and showing people, hey, man, I'm flawed, but I'm me. I love me, and I love you.
What? That's it. That's it, man. And we all know those people who somehow become not normal off of a crumb of success.
Oh, right. Believe me, we and know like, all yeah, too you well.
You got a crumb, man.
Right.
You got a crumb. You are not full. Right. You're not satisfied. You barely tasted success, and you not normal no more.
Right. Yeah, we happily dismiss those guys around here and keep it moving forward.
You have to.
This radio station is all about authenticity. So, yeah, right. we appreciate having honesty. And with the flaw thing, like, that's one thing we push. Personally, me, I stress.
We definitely stress it.
To let you know, to be encouragement to other people. Because, you know, when you get into a certain position, people think that you have no faults, no wrongs or anything. Like, no, we're growing daily, trying to get better daily, but there's still things that I'm trying to work out that I just don't have figured out yet at 30 years old. But, you know, we're still pushing towards it daily. So, and that uses that as the platform and the motivation to say you can do the same thing too.
Right. You know, and I think that's important, man. The next opportunity I get, God willing, to get back on that screen, you know, I think I already know what I want to do because I think it touches on that. The fact that we are flawed, but there's nothing wrong with saying that I want to achieve greatness.
Oh, yeah.
And that is something about me that may be special.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, unless we're saying it in the form of I got money, you know what I mean, or I got women, then it's not acceptable.
Right. You're looking down on everybody
You know, but
else.
Don't tell me because I do something that's supposed to be conscious or deep or whatever that's supposed to mean when I'm just aware. Right. You know, don't tell me because I'm doing it in a different form and because you don't hear me in the club that I'm you know, I'm something else. No, I'm just as great as I decide I want to be.
Exactly. And that's
you know, and if you don't feel that way about yourself, then let me try to help you. But if you still don't feel that way about yourself, then that's your problem.
Right.
Yeah, that's our issue. Now,
well, I'm not killing nobody every day.
Oh, hopefully not every day. That'd be rough.
Yeah, that's kind of rough, bro.
That came out wrong. You know,
no, we got you. We got you.
The other day. You know, once a week.
We feel you.
Cool. Now, let me ask you a question about this Fiveology. Me and my boy over here, we've been curious about this since we found out about this Fiveology. What is Fiveology? Explain to us who it is, what it is, and what do you guys do?
Okay, so I am a part of a poetry collective. Or five brothers, four of them are they're good friends of mine. We were on Twitter kind of joking randomly with each other that we should do a show together. You can actually go on YouTube.
Okay.
And if you type in Blacks and Five, because that was our original name. We went by the Blacks and Five because we thought it was fun.
Hey, that is fun. That's dope. That's dope.
For legal purposes, Joe Jackson is a little money hungry.
Right.
We had to change our name to Fiveology. Okay. But if you type in the Blacks and Five, you'll get something, and you'll see our very first poem we ever did together in Oakland, and it's a very honest poem. And so it consists of myself, Rudy Francisco, who is amazing, Andrew Tyree, Dr. Javon Johnson, and Sean William, formerly known as Inner City, mm-hmm. and we're just five brothers who, you know, we come from different walks of life. We all are. Stand on our own individually as spoken word artists very well.
Right,
and
right.
We decided to come together and collectively do some work to challenge us and to push us and make us better as artists.
Wow. That's
cool. I mean, honestly, that's what it was. And as a result of that, you know, we were able to, you know, be the opening act for Jill Scott's summer tour last year. We were on Verses and Flow for season three last season. We just rocked at Radio City Music Hall in New York for New Year's Eve with Jill Scott. And we you know, are working on some things now. We have a 90-minute show that we do that's called Inner Man Outer Space. It's a collection of work individually, collectively. So you may have all five of us up there doing a poem. Then you may have three of us up there. Then it may be two. Then one. Then back to four. You know, so.
That sounds like an experience right there.
We're a collection of brothers who all respect each other's craft immensely as individual artists and have now, you know, made a conscious decision to write together to get better.
Yeah, that's cool. And, I like that. That's
and
cool.
Anything that happens in the process, we'll take.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Now let me ask you this. You said that you took a one-way trip to Texas and you had to sell CDs to get back. So that was actually on my list of questions. So you actually have CDs that you put out, or how is that coming about?
So I have one spoken word album that I created a couple of years ago. It's called I Don't Dance. I'm working on a couple of things right now. Things have happened so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing I think people should understand is I created a spoken word album because people were asking for one so much, but it wasn't really my intent and my mission. I wasn't business-minded at the time.
Right.
And now that so many different things are happening, you know, I'm trying to just figure out. I got to create this timeline, which is a busy timeline.
Oh,
but yeah, I do have a spoken word album. It's called I Don't Dance. You know, people can always email me for more information on how to receive copies of the album.
Cool.
It's going to be on iTunes shortly.
That's
so yeah, I do have an album.
Oh, that's sweet.
It's a good deal.
Hey, let me, I wanted to ask you a question, and this is a personal question for me. This is off the script. This is just off the grid, if you don't mind me. When you see Arsenio, could you tell Arsenio to call me back?
I got you, brother. I'll tell him to get you.
I can't find Arsenio publicist nowhere. I'm trying to get in contact because I want to get him on the show because I'm from where he's from. He's from here.
Yeah, Cleveland. That's right.
Yeah, he is from Ohio. Ain't he? Yeah,
exactly. And so
right in our backyard, literally.
Literally. Like, I can see his house from here.
You know, brother, the one thing I can say about that man, and I advocate, I'll tell him, by the way, I got you.
Right,
but the one thing I say about this man that I feel so inclined to tell people is how genuine of a man he is.
He seems like it.
And I never knew that. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you, as soon as you step backstage on his show, the people, he has people working on his show now that were working on his show 25 years ago.
That's real.
Yeah, I can believe that.
You gotta, man, look at his interview with Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a soft-spoken man. He's a very sincere, genuine man. And I didn't realize how influential he was for so many people's careers.
Oh yeah.
You know, people don't pay homage to this man like they need to. This brother put in work.
Mad work.
Absolutely. For our culture, and he's doing it again now. Look at everybody he's putting on that show.
Right.
Yeah, he's putting people on.
He put me on the show. He put a guy from Oakland, you know, who teaches in the daytime, you know, on his show and gave me a platform. And then, brother, I just seen, I was watching a clip earlier today. He put David Banner on there doing some spoken word.
Right.
You know what I mean? So he's giving our genre a platform that nobody has been courageous enough to do.
Right.
You know, in late night television.
Yeah, in the prime time slot, so yeah, it's deep.
Yeah, you know, Jimmy Kimmel hasn't reached out yet. Jimmy Kimmel, please reach out. Jimmy found, you know, somebody.
Right.
Arsenio did that, and he's doing that. So I'll try to call you back, brother, but he's a good dude.
because I'm trying to reach a man, and I'm like, yo, I can't find his publicist. I say, you know what, I'm going to ask Prentice. Prentice, you go on there. When you get through with your poem, when you hug him, you know, when you're giving that dap.
Just do a poem about us, you know. Yeah. That'll help.
Yeah, you know, just put us out there. We appreciate it.
Real quick.
Right. So cool. Well,
I got you, man.
We got about two more questions for you, and we're going to let you go.
Okay.
But this is one thing I wanted to know, because a lot of times when we start things, we have a vision of, you know, this is where I want to go with business. This is my goal. But it always blossoms into something totally different than you expected. So what are you planning on doing with this poetry? What are you planning on it taking you?
The beauty of this is that I never had a plan.
Okay.
Wow.
I never had a plan. I've always considered myself somewhat of an urban hippie.
Okay.
Until I had kids and got a family. And I can't just go by the wind.
Right.
Yeah.
The beauty of this craft right here is that there is no glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Because there is nobody who has defined what is possible out of spoken word poetry, right?
Exactly.
So people have assumed that we do coffee shops, but I told myself a while ago that I didn't want to do just coffee shops. I wanted more than that.
Right.
I look at Kevin Hart specials and I go to concerts and I'm in awe. I look at often, you know, one thing I look at a lot, man, I look at Drake at Howard's Homecoming last year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on the internet, and you look, you type it in, Drake comes out, and you have, I don't know how many people were there, thousands, hundreds of thousands would look like,
mm-hmm.
saying all the words to his songs.
Right.
And I look at that and I say, why can't I get to the point where one day I could start a poem and stop and the crowd took the rest of my poem?
Yeah, exactly. Why not? Why not?
You on your way.
Why can't that happen? You know, why can that not happen? Because I do poetry. So, you know, for me, I don't see a glass ceiling because there isn't one. You know, like there's spoken word artists out here. You know, Rudy Francisco traveled. This is what he does. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I need to make that clear. This is what he does. Rudy does not have a 9-to-5. This poetry is his 9-to-5.
Right.
Brother is never home in San Diego. You know, he lives out of a bag doing poetry.
Right.
Wow. And is doing well for himself. You know what I mean?
Right.
Your brother's not asking to borrow $5 to get something to eat.
That's deep. That's
you know what I mean? So there's no glass ceiling to this. And you have a lot of poets out here who you may not have heard of who are making it possible for us to do what we're doing and who have already made it possible. You know, the spoken word artists who are on Deaf Poetry Jam.
Right. Right.
You know, they made it possible for us to be seen on a larger platform.
That's true.
So, you know, for me, my job is just to pay homage and get better and stay focused.
That's real. Now let's do this, Prentice. This is your platform to speak to the people. You got your chance to speak, whether it be spoken word, just say something to the people. Leave the people with something to be inspired by.
Okay. Something I'm working on. Being a black man in America means being my brother's keeper while keeping a distance from my brother because I don't trust him further than I could see him. It's believing the cops don't give a damn about you. It's learning how not to doubt yourself because everyone else already does. It is the love you have for your mother regardless of her flaws and dealing with your daddy issues so your son doesn't have to. Being a black man in America is a full-time job you will never see a single penny for. There are no breaks, no time off, no benefits. It is a lifelong commitment and an early death sentence. Being a black man in America is a gift, it is a blessing. It is a gift God chose for us to receive because he believes we can handle it. It is a gamble. It's being dealt a crappy hand. It's knowing every time you step outside, the world is a poker table. And whether you like it or not, your chips are all in. It is a grin you put on your face every time you feel pain just to let the world know they will not break you. Right after dropping down to your knees, praying to God, asking him to heal you because the pressure has gotten way too real. So you pop 30 pills, but it still doesn't kill you. But will is something that's going to the corner store without your pistol that's tucked under your What will is not detaching yourself from your best friend's dangerous lifestyle because your loyalty won't let you. Because you had not been around when that thing went down, you may not be here right now. Being a black man in America means you can die with a pack of Skittles in your pocket, have your murderer acquitted, then teamed up with celebrities, participate in the boxing match against the drug addict who used to rap, have somebody put it on paper you, and people look just like you will pay to see it, even though it won't be like that. It means black boy. Down, play it loud as you want, but that may be the last gas you ever pump. Being a black man in America means stay out of Florida. And I got a son who lives in Florida. So being a black man in America is to be a black man in America, and unless you are a black man in America, you will never understand what it's like to be a black man in America. But please, don't pity us. Envy us. We are whole pieces of broken. Some too shattered to care, and some just trying to put it all back together.
That's dope. That's knowledge right there. And you hit the nail on the head with that. Being a black man in America is being a black man in America. What was the name of that poem?
I think I'll call it Being a Black Man in America.
Okay, we can roll with that.
That's what I think I'm gonna call it. You know, I'm still working on it, man. First time I just got off in my head, but
you nailed it. I mean, outside of a minor little signal issues, we pretty much got all of that. That was on point. So we appreciate you breaking that with us.
No,
all good. I mean, it's technology. You know, it ain't all the way there, but we make it work. We appreciate you for being on. Do me a favor before when we close out, stay on the line. I want to talk to you really quick before we close out, but we're going to close out the show. Once again, you're on Culture Shock Entertainment Radio. This is Shock Therapy. You were in the house with the architect and my man, I'm just saying. We in the building with Prentice Powell. Man, you just heard the interview. There's nothing else for me to say.
Nothing. I'm speechless.
But we appreciate you, brother. We got to get you down here, man. We got to get you down here for a session. And we're going to do that, and we'll make it work.
All right, peoples.
All right, and until next time, we'll talk to you soon. We out.
Later.